Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Hey, welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton and Mark Hallett.
Hey, hey, what's up?
We're here in Linwood, Kansas today. We're going to talk about millennials. You know, back in the 80s, way back in
the
1880s. No, the 1980s.
Dude, that was only, what's crazy to think about is that's like almost 50 years ago.
I don't want to think about that. But in the 1980s, when I was planting churches, we were all interested in the boomers, right?
Yeah.
The baby boomers.
Baby boomers.
We were the ones that were in our 30s and, you know, 40s.
You were the hip cool.
We were the hip cool. Well, today, that age group, if you're looking at that age group that's having young families, you know, between 25 to 40 years of age, those are the millennials.
Yeah.
You know,
isn't that wild to think about?
Millennials are not teenagers, and they're not coming out of college. They're people who bought houses, have young families. They're millennials. And actually, millennials have some of them have a really committed view of faith. Yep. We're taking this from some of Barna's research, all right? And we'll post this on our show notes. But here's some harsh realities of millennials and their understanding of Christian faith and what attracts them and what keeps them. So as we're looking today, not at, you know, reaching boomers with young children, I'm in my 60s, I'm a boomer, but now it's the millennials with young children.
And I'm not even a millennial.
You're not even a millennial.
I'm a Gen Xer.
You're a Gen Xer.
So millennials are Kyle over here.
Yes.
And then his kids are Gen Z.
Yes.
But millennials are the young families, for the most part, that we're looking at reaching.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. And one of the things we have to realize is they're really more spiritually engaged than you might think.
Mm.
They really are even more complex spiritually than you might think. According to Barna, about one quarter of these millennials say they attend church once a month. They also say they attend a Bible study or they read their Bible on a regular basis. I think sometimes we look at them and we think, man, they're not religious at all. But they are. There's a lot more going on there in their heart and their mind than we understand.
That's true.
And sometimes they can appear to be very secular on the outside. Mm. They don't have some of the trappings that we would normally think of as, you know, conservative evangelical Christians, but in their heart and in their mind and in their worldview, they are far more spiritual. They value spiritual practices.
Yeah.
Now, they have been doing a lot of rethinking about institutions. And
That's huge.
They have seen where institutions, all kinds of institutions, have failed them, and including the church. And by the way, I was just thinking the other night, you know, I just now because of Instagram and Twitter and YouTube, and it's on your phone, you're looking at stuff all the time, just bombarded with stories of every single pastor who abuses a child or abuses someone or a failure. It's like it's constantly before us.
Yeah.
And that just reinforces to these young millennials that church may not be a particularly safe place for my family or for me, but it doesn't mean that they're opposed to spirituality, and it doesn't mean that they would even be opposed to a church if they felt like they could truly, truly trust it in many ways.
Well, David Kinnaman, who is the president of Barna Group, he's written two actually great books that I would recommend on this topic. One's called You Lost Me, and another one is called Unchristian. But I think in both of these, especially You Lost Me, I think, you know, there's three institutions in particular that millennials have a hard time trusting, and that is the government.
Right.
And even like marriage and family, it's why the rate of delayed marriage, if marriage at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then thirdly is the church for the reasons that you're saying.
Right.
And so the thing is, you can either just complain about this and say, well, they need to get their act together. You can say, man, we need to engage them where they're at.
Exactly.
And the reasons why there's that distrust and how do we help rebuild trust with this generation.
And don't assume that that mistrust means that they don't have any spiritual instincts or spiritual desires or curiosity. Because they do. But again, I couldn't agree more. Family has disappointed them. Government has disappointed them. And let's be honest, many times the institutional church has disappointed them.
Let me say something to this too, Clifton, because the church where I serve as a pastor, we have a lot of millennials. We have a lot of young families. What's interesting is in previous generations, I even think about in the world of apologetics, okay?
Yeah.
It was like, Well, listen, we're going to assume that they don't believe the Bible, that they don't believe in Christ. But listen, a lot of those, you're going to meet some folks like that, but a lot of these millennials, man, they're not asking those questions. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like, well, hey, I mean, I believe in God and I believe, you know what I mean? So in some ways, are we scratching where it's itching? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, or are we fighting battles that maybe boomers were dealing with or even Gen Xers, but millennials are in a different place. And one of the things is they are spiritual. They're very spiritual. Do we know how to engage them where they are in some of the struggles that they're having, specifically with institutions?
You know, I remember one time Spurgeon was talking about it. You take me to two plots of ground. You take me to a ground with nothing on it at all, completely bare, or a plot of ground full of weeds, and I'll choose the ground full of weeds because I know something can grow there.
Wow.
Okay? And I think maybe that's kind of where I think of millennials. Mm. Yeah, maybe their spirituality is kind of messed up. It's a little off cue. They don't trust the church. But there's something there. There's,
yeah.
And you can pull those weeds and put something in their place.
Yes.
You know that ground can produce some kind of life, some kind of soil.
Yeah, that's good.
I kind of see it like that. Number two, millennials want to make room for meaningful relationships.
Mm-hmm,
now, I know we're oversimplifying this. I understand that. So just don't send me an email and tell me what I already know. Mm-hmm. But in an oversimplified way, boomers were really interested in organizations and structures. You know, the big church. Can you provide stuff for my family? Do you have all these things going on? Millennials want to know about relationships. They want those close-knit, trustworthy relationships. They want authenticity because they don't trust institutions.
Yep.
They don't care how big your institution is.
Yep.
They don't really trust it.
Yeah.
They trust people. They want to know they can be trusted. And they deeply value relationships, close relationships. And they don't have as many of them as they would like to have.
Which is why, let's be honest, this is one of the great opportunities normative-sized churches have, is to actually engage millennials on a relational level, right? It's not going to be our big programs. Not that I'm against programs, but it's not our programs that are going to attract you as much as we love you. We know you. This is a place where you can be connected. We see that all the time, don't we? We see folks, millennials, who go, man, I want to be in a smaller church. You know, I want my family, I want my kids to be known.
Well,
and I want to know my pastor.
Barna says here that 59% of millennials who stay active in a church have some strong friendships with members older than they are.
I love that.
Versus the 31% who do not.
Yeah.
I mean, I think having that millennials value multi-generational.
Yep.
They value having grandparent-type figures around them.
Yep.
Many of them don't have their grandparents near them geographically.
That's right. That's been a shift
in culture.
Right. That's right.
And so they like having grandparent figures around them and their children.
And their children.
They like leaning into that. They love relationships. Look, if you're trying to engage and connect to millennials in your church, dial back the programs and dial up the relationships.
Oh, come on.
And give us opportunity for relationships.
Hey, say that again, bud. That's
dial
a great quote.
Dial back the programs and dial up relationships.
Yep.
And in order to have relationships in your church, you've got to create margin and time and space for those relationships.
Yeah, totally.
On-ramps for those relationships. And millennials will really value that.
I love that. I love that.
Absolutely. All right. What else? You want to talk about anything
else? Okay, the next one is teaching cultural discernment.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We're in a very confused culture right now.
Yes, yep. And here's the thing, like everybody, but millennials, they're looking for answers, man. It's like, how does faith in Jesus relate to this crazy world that we're living
in? Because they're bringing up children in this.
Exactly.
And their kids are in school.
How do we navigate this?
And they want to know how to navigate it.
Yes.
They don't want to just know. And excuse me for being overly simplistic, they don't want to just know that it's evil and we need to be afraid of it and pray that Jesus comes back and this whole place burns and we all go to heaven.
Yeah.
That's true, but I've got a third grader right now in a public school. What do I do about that?
What do I do about that? That's
how
exactly
do I
right.
handle that?
Yes.
And giving them some tools on how to be gospel parents in this very secular culture.
Yep.
Because basically, even we boomers, we didn't have to face that.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I did not have to face things with my kids that my own children have to face with their kids.
That's true.
And so millennials are wanting some cultural discernment here.
And that's why one of the best things you can do practically is offer a course. Offer a course, not just maybe to your church, but to the community. How do we help navigate these waters with our young people, right? There was a book that just came. There's a lot of books being written right now of deep concern with children and engaging culture. And so I would say, listen, Pastor, you've got an opportunity to help equip your people and equip those in your community. I look at even like Linwood right here, this whole community. Right. You know, there's folks going, dude, this is a different world than I grew up in. What do I do? How do I help my kids or my grandkids, quite frankly?
And frankly, they millennials respond to and they want the truth and they want to know how to apply the truth.
Yeah.
But they want it expressed in love, not in hatred and vitriol.
Yeah.
In other words, you can go to any cable news network and you can find vitriol on both sides.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not what they're looking for.
Yeah.
They're looking for truth, absolutely. And how do I? And basically, this. Are you ready? How do I live rightly in a broken world?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think through that lens and preach through that lens, you know, we live in a broken world. It's going to get even more broken. Here's how you can live rightly in a broken world. Here's how you can live lovingly in a broken world. Mm-hmm. Here's how your children can live correctly in a broken world.
Yeah.
That is what they will cling on to.
They are
desperate to hear that kind of, how do I engage the culture? How do I protect my children from the culture without becoming hateful to the culture?
Yeah, that's right.
And becoming sort of a polarization kind of person.
You're always going to find those folks, and those voices are loud. But most are not in that lane. They are right where you're saying. They're wanting to know, how do we live this out and help raise our kids in this?
Yeah, and one of the things that the writer says here is that they don't want overprotective impulses that are driven by fear of the culture.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
I think, guys, that's where many of us find ourselves, because the culture is so frightening to us right now that all they hear in our churches is, we got to be afraid of it.
Fear, fear, fear.
It's getting bad. It's going to get worse.
Yep.
That's not what they want to hear. They want guidance on engaging the culture in a meaningful way and how to live a distinctively Christian life in this culture.
Mm.
Guys, please think about that as you're working with millennials. Please, that's what they want to know. The idea of finding a way to bring their faith in Jesus to the problems they encounter in the world seems to be one of the most powerful things they're looking for.
Yeah.
And if all we do is just say, the world is terrible,
yeah,
sin is awful,
yep,
this place is awful,
yep,
and then that's not going
to
relate where they are.
And this leads to the next one, which is embracing the potency of vocational discipleship. Now, really what all that means is millennials, and I meet a lot of young men, millennials this way, they're going, how does my faith really make a difference? What should it look like in my 40-hour-a-week job?
Exactly.
Connecting my worlds. It's not just, man, I give an hour and a half on Sunday. Like, literally, how do I work for the glory of God as a Christian in this world? And that matters, because we're called to serve the Lord in different ways.
You know, I'm in my 60s, and I don't know how much more time I've got left, but I've been all over the page in my life. The Lord's been so gracious to me. You know, started out in a country church and then became very much part of the church growth movement and the seeker-sensitive movement, and then dived into the Reformed movement. And
you've been all over the place.
I've been all over the place. Now I think I'm sort of in a good place and sort of in a place of sort of stability. But I've been in church all my life. I mean, I was born on a Wednesday afternoon, and my dad taught prayer meeting that night. I mean, my mom didn't go, and I didn't go, but I mean, he left the hospital and taught prayer meeting. I've been in church all my life. My great grandfather was a pastor. So, but here's what I'm thinking in the future, going along with this. Again, millennials want to know, how does my vocation, my regular life, how does that intersect with the church? When I was growing up, the church was our life. We went on Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. And then we had Thursday night visitation. And then we'd have, you know, deacons meetings another night of the week. And my mother would have WMU meetings another day of the week. It was like everything was centered on coming to the church.
Yeah.
That's not where millennials are.
Yeah.
And you can get mad about that. You can get upset about that. You can say they're not committed to Christ. It's not that they're not committed to Christ. They see the world differently.
That's right.
And I'm thinking, as I'm thinking through this, I'm thinking, does the Lord want me to maybe plant another church? And I don't know this. I'm just talking out loud here. But what would a church look like if we came together, maybe even on a Sunday evening rather than a Sunday morning, and we came together and we worship together. Maybe we even share a meal together. We sing and we pray and we hear a message of the gospel and we encourage one another, and then we equip each other all week long to just in our job and mm-hmm. in our schools and in our neighborhood. Just, I mean, seriously,
no.
be missionaries where we are.
Yeah.
Just, I know mm. that seems overly simplistic, and there's a whole lot to it that might or might not work. But in my mind, I'm thinking, as millennials, they want to know, how does my 40-hour-a-week job, mm-hmm. how do mm-hmm. how does my work in my neighborhood and with the PTA and with the Homeowners Association, how does all that fit in with my Christian walk?
Exactly.
And if you could create an environment where you had really almost no programs in church, but you gave people opportunity to and equip them, and you've got to equip them and encourage them.
Right.
How do I really live out my life? Could I really? And you think that's kind of how the first century did.
I know. I was going to say, man,
they just met read in the New homes. Testament. They met in homes week to week, and then they just went out and told everybody about Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I love it. I love it.
But well, then again, what do I know? That's how I end every sermon, by the way. That's my benediction. But then again, what do I know?
Well,
I'm just thinking out loud. Because we look at this, and I realize millennials don't trust organizations. Yeah. They don't trust institutions. Mm-hmm. And we live in a very anti-Christian culture. And maybe we need to spend more time preparing our people how to live rightly in that culture. And then what I'm trying to say is free them up to live in that culture.
Yeah.
All right?
Not make them feel guilty.
Because they're not coming to church
yeah,
five times a
week. Yeah, doing a million things a week, yep. Okay, here's the last one here, is facilitating connection with Jesus. I mean, it all comes back to this, right? This is interesting. It says, more than a mere community club, right? Helping youth cross the threshold of adulthood, church communities can help millennials generate a lasting faith by facilitating a deeper sense of intimacy with God. This is interesting. He says, for example, millennials who remain active are more likely than those who dropped out to say they believe Jesus speaks to them personally in a way that's real and relevant, 68%. Right. Additionally, actives are active in their faith, are much more likely to believe the Bible contains wisdom for living a meaningful life. So again, how are we helping millennials not only understand, but live into a real living relationship with God?
I'm telling you, I've talked to many millennials in the last few weeks. So this is why this is so much on my mind. And they don't have the commitment to the institution that I wish they had. I get a little upset with them sometimes. You need to be in, you need to be
so do I. Hell yeah.
You need
to
be active.
That's
you
right.
need to be, and they push back and they say, why? And I say, well, because of the relationships and the warmth and the family. And they look at me like, that's not happening at my church. I don't know. Are you going to a different church than I am?
Interesting.
That doesn't happen at my church. Just because you say it should happen, it's not happening.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, wait a minute. Yes, it is. No, doesn't happen in my church. No, there's no authentic relationships
Isn't
there.
Isn't that crazy?
And it's like, you can't fool them.
No, you can't.
Okay, you can't. And you can't guilt them into being part of an institution because that's what we should be doing.
Yeah.
They're basically saying, if it's an authentic relationship with Jesus and with believers, I'm there. If it's not, I don't think I want that. Now, again, we can argue and fuss and say, well, they're not being committed. They need to stay there and make it work. I get all of that.
Yep.
But the point of this is understanding how millennials think and what their process is, and then making sure we address that in some way.
Man, that's really good.
I feel like we've been very confusing in this
podcast. Hey, listen, it's good stuff to think about. You've done great.
Have I done great?
Good insights. You're just great. Just want to encourage you.
I'm just an old, confused boomer.
Hey, but listen, these are conversations, boomer. Listen, these are conversations. You are lost, confused.
And I think I want my Sunday night church because I don't get up on Sunday mornings as easy as I used to.
Well, I think that's a factor for you.
I think that probably is. All right. I'll let you know how it goes if we do the Sunday night church and see how that happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there.
Start a whole new trend. All right. I don't know. See you guys later.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.